Hello everyone, Scott Myers here at the Self-Storage Academy, which is being held live in Orlando, Florida, March 31st through April 2nd, and I want you to be there. Listen, there has never been a better time to invest in self-storage, and there is no better team than ours to show you how to do it, because we wrote the book on how to invest in self-storage. Literally, I created the best-selling home study system back in 2007, titled How to Find, Evaluate, Purchase, and Manage Self-Storage Facilities. And since then, we have helped thousands of people launch and scale their self-storage business and have now become the nation's go-to resource for all things self-storage. And that's because we not only talk the talk, we walk the walk. Day in and day out since 2005 through now two recessions and amassing 2.5 million square feet of self-storage, totaling over 15,000 doors nationwide. There is nobody else that has more experience in self-storage that is teaching people how to invest in self-storage than our team. So if you're ready to launch and scale your self-storage business, then go to selfstorageinvesting.com. Click on the events tab to grab your ticket to the upcoming Self-Storage Academy in Orlando. That's March 31st through April 2nd, along with tickets to our virtual academy for those who can't make it or just aren't ready to go live at this time. So that, again, is selfstorageinvesting.com. Click on the event tab, but do it now as seating is limited and we have sold out every academy since 2008, so go do it now. And on behalf of my team, we look forward to seeing you then. Take care.
This is the Self-Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and over the past 16 years, we have acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated over 2 million square feet of self-storage nationwide with the help of my incredible team at selfstorageinvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self-Storage Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and this week we have a returning guest, my friend and partner, Fernando Angelucci. Now, at the age of 30, Fernando has built a portfolio of over $100 million in self-storage assets across the country in just 3 short years. Fernando has diversified his investments between purchasing existing cash-flowing assets, building ground-up REIT-grade facilities, and adaptive reuse conversions of big-box retail stores into Class A self-storage. Now, in addition to his own acquisitions, Fernando provides other self-storage investors access to off-market facilities at drastic discounts and capital also for strategic partnerships. He is a longtime student of ours and is currently a member and contributor to our self-storage mastermind. And we also partnered on a ground-up facility that turned out very, very well, which we're going to touch on today as well. It's just been a joy to witness the growth of both his company and his personal growth as he achieves higher levels of success within our industry. So, Fernando, it's always a pleasure. Why don't you catch us up to speed as to what you've been doing since our last conversation?
Thanks for having me on, Scott. Yeah, it's been crazy. Last year, year and a half, I think it was when I came on last. We have multiple ground up deals in the pipeline now, all syndicated deals. We just signed a purchase agreement to sell 10 of our smaller facilities in a portfolio to a large buyer, and they're offering us a crazy cap rate. Basically, I told the broker that I'm not interested unless he can bring me a Godfather offer. And he said, how about a 5.5 cap on Class C facilities? That sounds about right.
Perfect. We'll take that. And thank you. May I have another?
Right. So just recapitalizing the company right now, going out and doing bigger and bigger projects. We've slightly adjusted our buy box criteria internally, which is now producing much more wholesale deals for our cash buyers or our buyers list now, because we're saying no to a lot more deals than we did in the past.
Mm-hmm. I want to touch on the wholesale side, Fernando, but I want to circle back. The 10 facilities that you put under contract and sold, you mentioned to the broker that you're not looking to sell unless you get to this type of an offer. Tell me how that has changed and what the rest of, say, 2021 looked like. There's a whole lot of folks, including you and I both know, that never had planned to sell, not even in the next 2 to 5, maybe 7 years. But in this market right now, where we are seeing some offers that are pretty high, some cap rates that are extremely low, tell me how your business plan has changed over the course of maybe last year and heading into 2022, just given the fact that the environment has kind of taken a change and caught us by surprise at something that none of us really expected.
Yeah, absolutely. So on our cash flowing portfolios, typically our internal hold time on these are ones that we don't do with partners, is 15 years. So we call these our retirement properties, if you will. And then when the broker came with this 5.5 cap offer, that was the equivalent of 15 years of cash flow in 1 year. So I said, you know what, that kind of hits our goal, even though we're not going to hold it. So might as well take it. And another contributing factor to saying yes to selling those facilities were the fact that these smaller facilities, they take a lot more manpower. We have found that there's better economies of scale when we go after these 65,000+ square foot facilities. Either build them or buy them. And with that, it allows us to kind of reach our goal of being at 8.5 million square feet by December of 2030. Can't do that buying 18,000 to 25,000 square foot facilities anymore. So we said, hey, let's go ahead and sell these off, kind of clean the books. That allows us to recapitalize the company and go after some of these larger facilities or build some of these larger facilities to get to that 8.5 million square foot goal.
At the end of the day, it's really not apples to apples, but pretty darn close when it comes to the fact that each deal takes a certain amount of time. And if there's more commas and zeros behind it, it still takes the same amount of time. A 60,000 square foot acquisition, a 100,000 square foot development takes almost as much time from A to Z as it does to buy these 25,000 or less square foot facilities. And there's only so much time that we have, even if we delegate and you've built out an incredible team, but there's still just things that Fernando has to do that nobody else can do. And so we find ourselves in that position where we just have to be mindful of time and going after the bigger ones. But you've built an incredible machine in terms of your marketing and lead generation. So that sometimes produces opportunities. Well, many times produces opportunities for you to be able to take these facilities down. But then sometimes it produces opportunities that are still deals, not just opportunities, but they truly are a deal, but they just don't fit your buy box or your acquisition criteria. And you've done an incredible job of really kind of building a business within a business above wholesaling. So, you know, kind of walk us through the genesis of that. And then also for some of the folks that may be listening that are somewhat new to self-storage, what a wholesale deal looks like in the self-storage world compared to, say, single family or some of the other asset classes.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as the genesis goes, when I first came into your self-storage academy, I think in 2015, I started off as a residential wholesaler. So I already had the skills and kind of the framework in place, the CRMs, everything kind of loaded up. And when we were dipping our toes into self-storage to begin with, I said, hey, let's try to wholesale a few of these just to test the concept to make sure that we're underwriting them correctly and buyers are willing to even buy them at what we're putting them under contract for. When we saw that started to work, then it kind of gave us a green light to start acquiring our own because we proof was in the pudding. The concept was proven. Nowadays, our buy box are, it has to be over 35,000 square feet day one with the ability to expand up past 65,000 square feet within 18 months. So if it doesn't hit that criteria, even if it is a 10 or 11 cap deal, it goes out to the list. And I use those numbers specifically because I think we've wholesaled something like 6 or 7 facilities in the last 6 weeks. All of them went out to our list at 8 to 11% cap rates day one. So when I hear people complaining that there's just no good deals out there, it's like, yeah, if all you're shopping with is brokers, then maybe there's not good deals. But I'm out here. I know there's some other very talented wholesalers out here. Tim Kaine, I think, is also putting out some really good content as well, some good deals. So when we started looking at this business, we were first doing it just to kind of to offset marketing cost. And then we realized that very quickly, it's a pretty large revenue generator in and of itself. So our marketing side of our business right now is spending about $150,000 a year going direct to seller. There's only about 70,000 facilities in the United States. And on our list, based on our criteria, after we scrub out all the REITs and the property management companies, we're hitting about 37,000 to about 40,000 owners a year. And we'll touch them anywhere between every 3 months to once a year based on how many times we've talked to them and where they are in the process of owning and selling their own facility. And very quickly, we noted the revenue that comes off this is pretty large. So for example, since I started the wholesaling business alone, we've wholesaled something like $15 million worth of self-storage facilities. And off of that, we were able to pull about $1.5 million in net wholesale fees. And we have another, I think, $665,000 scheduled for the next 90 days to come in. So it's pretty lucrative in and of itself, but it isn't the end all be all because these are deals that we would have said no to anyway. They're very good price deals. They have a lot of juice and value add on them. So it doesn't make sense just to let them fly back into the ether. You might as well just monetize them and bring them in-house to our community, allow them to have the opportunity for people that have maybe different buy boxes than I do.
And this, folks, this was a conversation that we just recently had. Fernando was a guest speaker at our self-storage academy, and the questions had come up about the wholesale side of his business. And not to reiterate what he just mentioned, but as he just mentioned, there's so many folks out there that are looking for deals that aren't willing to go and do the heavy lifting. Yet when it comes time to go to a wholesaler, sometimes they feel as if, well, if he's making money, I'll just go do this on my own. Why would I buy something from somebody else? And that's because, quite honestly, Fernando and as you mentioned, Tim and several other folks in our community, we've been at this for 15 years and we've taught a lot of folks about the business and really about the marketing side and how to fill your funnel up. And when you're spending that many dollars, and Fernando is really at the top of the heap in terms of the marketing dollars that he puts in place, he's going to find a little bit of everything to put in the hopper, larger deals than he's wanting to do, or maybe something that is further out from where he wants to invest, or smaller deals, whatever that looks like. And that's the same for everybody, or just what they're looking for at the time, or just too many deals, the sheer volume. And so they're going to wholesale them off, because 100% of nothing is nothing. If we can monetize a deal, then by all means do so. And so we've built, and what we're really proud of at this point is the fact that we've built a community of folks that are doing this, and we're sharing deals within that community. But just yesterday, I was meeting with my partners down in Florida for our fund, and we wrote 4 LOIs, letters of intent, just yesterday. So folks, the deals are out there, and we're probably not going to buy all of those. Maybe one of those will fit our criteria, but we won't know until we get to the final negotiations. But when we have a deal, we'll lock it up. And we'll monetize it somehow. We'll buy it ourselves. We'll do a joint venture. We may wholesale it off. It just really depends. And so the point that I'm making, folks, is that you got to get plugged in, do your own marketing, and pay attention to and seek out and find the wholesalers like Fernando, or join a community like ours that has access to the deals that you can get in front of, because the deals are out there right now. The low-hanging fruit may be gone, but deals are made, and they're not just waiting for you to grab a hold of them. So, Fernando, tell us, as we head into then, how does your buying criteria change, you know, from anything that you hold versus anything that you hold off? You just talked about you're looking at the bigger deals, 55,000 and up, but what about in terms of returns? Is there a certain metric that you have from an existing facility? You have to create X amount of value in X amount of time, or a development project. What does that look like, and how do you come up with that formula? So what ticks the box to buy, or something to wholesale, or just pass on?
Yeah, absolutely. And before I go to that, Scott, I'd just like to expand a little bit, because I do hear a lot of people saying, hey, well, why don't I just go do this and go wholesale myself? So I just want to give you guys a peek into behind the curtain here. So, you know,
very
as,
good.
As it were. Do. So the $150,000 that we spend in marketing a year, that's just on the physical marketing itself. That doesn't count the sales we have in the marketing department. That doesn't count the director that we have above those employees. So the cost is pretty astronomical. So if you're only buying 1 or 2 deals a year, it really doesn't make sense to kind of start this whole outfit yourself. Just come over to us. The fee that you'll pay to us is nominal. It's included in the price that we send out in the deal. So when you're running your numbers, there's no surprises. That's the end all be all price to you. And if someone wants to go out and do this, I'm totally more than happy to help you and share, you know, abundance mentality. I'll give you all the resources that we use. Really just comes down to time, processes, and are you willing to manage 6, 7, 8 new employees? A lot of people that ask me and say, hey, why don't I just go do this myself instead of paying a wholesale fee? They're usually a one-man shop, or maybe two-man shop, two-man and woman shop, you know, wife and husband. So just those are things that you got to kind of keep into account before you do this, because it is a very high cost business. So you really need the volume to support it. So with that being said, as far as the changes in our buy box criteria, what we've noticed,
if I could, I don't want to add on to the rabbit hole that we continue to go down, but you bring up a good point, and we've talked about this a lot. There is this also the mentality of folks that are buying from wholesalers or considering it to say, well, why would I do that instead of doing it myself? And why would I pay somebody else a fee? And Fernando, you bought this facility for $100,000 and you're listing it for $150,000. Well, I can go do that myself. Well, for the reasons that Fernando just said, and it doesn't matter if I buy a facility from Fernando or any other wholesaler, if I'm looking at a $100,000 facility and I know that I can make, or a $150,000 facility and I know that at some point I can sell for $300,000, I don't care if Fernando bought it for a nickel. It doesn't matter if it meets my criteria and I'm going to get a 2x return, which is what I'm looking for myself and my equity partners, then it shouldn't matter. So the point there is, folks, don't get hung up on what somebody's going to make in a wholesale fee. If it meets your criteria and you didn't have to go out and produce it or spend all the money to do so, then the wholesalers are your best friends. Don't make villains out of them just because they've created a business of providing you opportunities for you to make money. So with that, Fernando, I just want to make that point and sure. Carry on.
Yeah. So as far as the changes in our buy box criteria, in the past, we were very cap rate driven. So day one cap rate. And then once we got a little bit more sophisticated, then we started looking at what will the cap rate be in 12 or 18 months. And that caused a lot of deal flow to come into our funnel. So we look at maybe 20 to 25 deals a week now. That's a lot of deals to underwrite. So we have to triage them in a certain way. Now that we're kind of growing up, if you will, we notice that it's more a game of arbitrage than it is a game of day one cap rate. So what can I make on this deal as a spread over my financing cost. And as long as it cash flows and it hits those metrics, then it makes sense for the scale. So one of the things that we noticed very recently as we've been building these portfolios is that portfolio of 10 properties, when I bought those, I underwrote them with an exit price of an 8 cap. But then just by combining them into a larger portfolio and then reaching these larger buyers that have much lower cost of capital than, say, a one-off buyer, all of a sudden the cap rate starts dropping. So now there's a way to make money not only from the individual facility itself, but from the volume of combining multiple facilities together. So we need to get deals into the hopper and put them together into that portfolio. So now, like I said, and I alluded to, you know, some of these buyers, they're going out and they're getting 1.5% to 2% debt. And then they're going and raising the equity on the bond market in Europe that has negative interest rates and offering maybe half an interest rate. So their combined total equity cost, equity and debt cost, is something like 1.8 or 2%. So it makes sense for them to go out and buy things at a 4.5% or 5% cap rate because they're still making a 300 basis point spread on their capital. They're doubling their money. So it doesn't matter. So I just looked at what these big boys are doing and say, hey, why can't we also do that as well? How do we find lower cost of capital, both on the debt and the equity side, so that we can start making more aggressive offers? Because here's the thing. I've had multiple buyers say, I only buy things that are 8 cap or better, day one. It's like, well, that's great to hear. But if you don't ever buy a deal because you keep getting outbid, then it doesn't matter if you buy an 8 cap or a 20 cap or a 5 cap. It doesn't matter because you're not making any of your money. And we noticed that we were getting outbid on a lot of properties. So when we finally changed our acquisition strategy, not only to encompass lower cost of capital and an arbitrage, you know, more of an arbitrage play as opposed to just this is the day one cap rate that I need. And then also looked at the ability to do some arbitrage on the exit cap rate based off of size of the portfolio, then we started to get a lot more offers accepted and start to grow our portfolio much faster, which then in turn allowed us to access more equity at cheaper amounts and more debt at cheaper amounts. Because now when they look at our balance sheet, they say, hey, this looks really good.
We've gotten pegged 15 years ago now. We created our home study system. And at that time, when interest rates were at 8%, I used a case study or two in our home study system with a 10% cap rate. And so people to this day are saying, well, I followed your home study system, or I have your home study system, and I can't find any 10% cap rate deals. And I said, well, no wonder, because they aren't out there. You're right. Keep looking, but you missed the process. And it's that. It's call it the arbitrage, or just call it the yield spread, 2 to 3 points, basis points above what interest rates are, is kind of typical for the sandbox that we operate in, that we play in, which is buying these Class C facilities and bringing up to a B and then selling them to a bigger player by creating value in at some point. But it's no different, as Fernando just mentioned, which is selling something at a 5 cap when somebody else is coming along and their cost of capital is at a 2%. The spread's the same, it's 3%. And so when you recognize that, when you're on the acquisition side or on the selling side, that is how you play this game. And it's all about creating and building value, but how you get there in terms of valuations based upon the yield spread, based upon the capital spread. So Fernando, we did very well with this together using this strategy on a development project. And so to protect the folks that purchased that facility, how's that, as well as the rest of our partners, without delving in and giving a lot of details on the project, because we're probably not at liberty to do so, share a little bit about that project and how we were able to achieve that in real time, having closed this just about 60 days after this podcast is airing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a ground up development that we were working on together, and it was a pretty large development. It was 108,000 net rentable square feet and change. I think it was like 108,659 or something like that. So it was definitely in the wheelhouse of these larger operators that have a lot of cash, very low cost of capital. And our eventual goal was to build it and then actually spend 4 years after building it, stabilizing, getting it to 90%. But we had a broker again that approached us and said, hey, I think I can sell this for your 5-year exit price today. And to be honest with you, Scott, I didn't believe him at first. But then when I started looking at
just trying to get the listing and telling us what we wanted to hear.
That's right. That's right. But more so now that I'm becoming more a student of macroeconomics and what the macroeconomic environment is going, it actually makes a ton of sense. And I'm kind of kicking myself for selling some of my facilities. So here are kind of the metrics that I think are important to people. And I've pulled a lot of this from, you know, some of the economists and some of the more celebrity investors out there, like Ray Dalio and Sam Zell and some of these players. When you look at what's going on right now, number one, we've printed about 40% of all dollars in existence in the last 12 months. That's absolutely insane. So just going back to super basic, just chart that we see in economics 101, when you increase the money supply by almost double, and that same amount of money, that double the money is chasing the same amount of goods and services, naturally, those goods and services will double in price because there's more money chasing them. So that's number one. Number two, which is a piece of this, is that a lot of these big players, they stopped buying during COVID, during the pandemic. So, but they still had a ton of these properties in their portfolio that were just kicking out great cash flow. I know all my facilities during the pandemic, they started increasing in rents by like 17, 22%, crazy. So now not only are they not deploying capital that they had already allocated to go out the door, but they're starting to collect more and more capital and sitting on it. So if you look at the inflation numbers that we're seeing, CPI is heavily manipulated right now. It doesn't include rent. It doesn't include food. It doesn't include gas, all these things that when I go see them, I'm seeing, cars, exactly. These huge sticker shocks. Current CPI is claiming about 7%. But when you go back to the 1980 calculation that they used to calculate CPI before they started manipulating this, we're actually closer to like 14, 15%. So not only are you losing 15% of your cash value year over year, but if you're not also making 15% on your investments, you're going backwards, right? Yeah. So I think those two things were one of the main factors on the money side. Now, on the supply chain and construction side, we saw huge issues with construction material pricing. So steel went up like 500% in a period of, 8 months maybe? In addition to that, you also saw supply chain issues where to get a steel order for a decent-sized self-storage facility that you're building, we were 6, 8, 10 months out from putting the deposit down to actually getting that delivered. So I think both of those in combination, not wanting to take the construction risk, not want to take the supply chain risk or the variable cost of floating materials in combination with cash losing value as well as inflation, I think now it makes sense that these larger players are willing to pay our 5-year stabilized exit price at certificate of occupancy just to get their money on the street.
And the real estate investment trust, the REITs in the storage industry, the larger players that are public, they've always had, it's always been inherent that they have the pressure of producing returns for their investors on Wall Street. You know, they have to produce quarter over quarter returns. And that only happens by either increasing rates by a large amount, but mostly from growth. That's how they really are able to compete with each other and outpace each other. And so if there's no development going on, which, as you just mentioned, Fernando, with the lag times and the just the inability, I mean, doing business on the development end is just flat out tough these days. They can't, it's going to be from day one when a project starts. If they're lucky, we're 12 months before anybody even opens the doors, and then another at least year before they begin to produce any cash flow. Yeah, the REITs in a much shorter time frame need to be producing additional returns for their investors. And so if they can pick one up right now with that cash that they have, whether they just open the doors or if it's in lease up and close to producing cash flow, they're going to grab it almost because they have to right now. And so there are many, many factors in the economy right now that are making it very profitable for merchant developers, people that develop these properties and with the sole intention of selling it off to a REIT, to other folks that have existing assets right now that they've leased up, or maybe they've owned them for a number of years and have depreciated them, for them to be able to exit because they are going to get the higher valuations than probably any other time, at least that I've seen in my 17 years in the business. So all that to say, and Fernando, we've done a lot of this in terms of guests on our podcast. Whether we're getting out the crystal ball or just talking what 2022 looks like. And it only because we're in such a fluid market right now and things are changing so rapidly, you know, that, tell us where you're headed in 2022. You know, what are you doubling down on outside of what you already shared with the larger projects? You know, what do things look like as you're heading into this year or even next quarter for that matter?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we have started to do, and this is out of a page of Sam Zell's book, he's a fellow Chicagoan. When you're in these inflationary environments and these inflated asset price environments, the safest way to invest is based off of replacement cost. So if you can buy properties below replacement cost, that you're always going to win in the end. And so that's what we started doing. Now we're just saying, hey, I don't care what the cap rate is day one. Am I coming in below what it's going to cost me to buy this land and build this exact same asset on this piece of property? If the answer is yes, it's automatically a yes to us. And then we figure out everything on the back end. So that's one thing that has really changed for us. I'm still going full bore with the ground up developments within reason. So we have an internal kind of guideline where we will only take a certain amount of construction development debt on a monthly basis compared to our existing cash flow that's coming in. Being a wholesaler and being one that's pretty particular about who we let on our list, one of the nice things for me is that everyone that wants to come in on our buyers list has to interview with me. They have to physically call me and have a 10 to 20 minute conversation. And I always ask the same questions. How many recessions have you been through? How many of those did you lose your shirt? Why did you lose your shirt? If you didn't, why not? And then I've been able to kind of distill down from almost, I think I've interviewed over 3,600 investors now that have come in on both the residential side, multifamily, and the self-storage side more recently. And one of the biggest issues that people bring up when they lost their shirt was, first, personal expenses growing to meet income. And then all of a sudden the income's not there the next day. So keep personal, your fixed expenses down as much as possible. But then on the second side is taking on too many opportunistic investments that really require, you know, a sale price or a certain cap rate or valuation 5 years down the line based on today's
gratification and a capital event. Yeah.
Right. And so that gets people in trouble. Yeah, that gets people in trouble. So if you can't carry that debt with just your existing portfolio and are just assuming that a refinance is going to save you, you're in trouble coming down the pipe. So I'm still working on the development side. However, the timeline in which that I would be continuing these developments have changed, actually based on a speaker that you brought into one of the self-storage masterminds. So the president of Storage Mart actually came and spoke to us a couple quarters ago, and he laid out, I mean, the guy was a data genius. I mean, he laid out 2.5 hours of just hard numbers and what he's seeing in the market. So what we're probably going to do is continue to develop until about mid-2023, maybe end of 2023. And at that point, we're going to stop all developments, finish all the ones that we have in process, and then start focusing more on building up our cash flow side to be a much larger percentage of our portfolio compared to our development side.
A couple of things I wanted to have you clarify, Fernando. So we look at our portfolio in an acquisition the same way we would look at it if we were buying it at exit of our own facilities. And so how do we look at it? We have a number of folks that are developers that look at our existing facilities and they'll make that comment, well, I can build it for that. Yes, there's time and there's effort and that is money and there's a value in that to putting an income stream on something, but also at the end of the day, can I build it? So that number has moved as well. It's been static for a number of years for a single story facility, taking out depreciation, just, you know, all in cost to build it, $35-$40 a square foot on most of the secondary and even some of the tertiary markets that we are investing in. But that number has gone up dramatically. As we just mentioned, you know, steel cost has gone up 500%, concrete, and just the length of time it takes to get it something built also is a factor as well. So, you know, the metrics that you're using, the model that you're using, is this based upon your own developments, or is there a number that you're comfortable with to say you're looking at an existing facility right now and it is a single story, non-temperature controlled asset? So my build number is this, or if it's a multi-story, all temperature controlled class A institutional grade facility, my number is this. How are you coming up with those numbers right now? And is there an adjustment based built into that as well for maybe 30, 60, 90 days out? Does that my question make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It tracks. So exactly. So when we first started this business, we learned from you, hey, $35-$40 a foot, you're good. I just finished development of a single story kind of drive up mix climate control deal. And we were at $65 a foot. And that's with the seller. Basically, it was a facility that we bought from a seller. The seller also happened to be a steel manufacturer and self-storage builder. So he gave us kind of a good deal for buying his property at a certain price. And then he gave us a good deal on the expansion. So that's already with some discounts in place, $60-$65 a foot. So if I'm coming in, and this is based on, I look at this more from a total project cost than from a hard soft cost type thing. So I need to know what the land cost is included in that. Financing and interest reserves and operating expenses are also included in this. If I see a deal that's in a, let's say, class C, class B type deal, B minus, it's in a decent market. The metrics make sense as far as median income, curb cut, vehicle per day, competitors being at 90%+ occupancy. If it's below $65 a foot, I'm going to almost automatically buy it. I don't even need to see the current revenue on it because I know I can get it up to where I need it to be. On the development side, where we're at right now is about 95 to 98 bucks a foot currently. And I foresee that potentially going up a little bit in some spots and then going down a little bit in some other spots. So for example, steel, we saw this huge increase. Steel has stopped going up. It's kind of leveled out, but now I'm keeping a very close eye on kind of these macroeconomic trends. One being this Evergrande collapse, one of the largest developers in China. It's something like multiple hundred billions of dollars in defaults. And already they were one of the largest consumers of Chinese steel in the world. And already they're starting to cancel a lot of their orders. And we're starting to see these Chinese steel brokers dropping prices per ton just to get the 3 years of pipeline of steel they already have out the door. So hopefully that's going to come over to us and the brokers aren't going to just keep the spreads, right? But I'm not underwriting for that to drop. Yeah. I'm still underwriting with massive contingencies on some of our construction projects. We're putting up to 35 to 50% contingencies on our materials pricing, as well as 30 to 50% contingency on the timeline to complete the project, because we don't know what's going on with the supply chains.
Yeah, we're underwriting process. I think people are growing tired. Our team members are growing tired of the delays because there are so many factors that we're including. And every time we make one of those considerations with regards to a contingency that is related to time, we have to go backwards because it does add additional cost to everything. And so, yeah, the banks, SBA kind of started stating that they were going to add, you know, they were going to double their contingencies and they were going to make you pay cash out of pocket at the commencement of a project. It wasn't in the overall underwriting. And then they're going to do their 70 or 75% LTC or LTV. They stated that we're going to double the contingency percentage from 10 to 20 or 15 to 30, and you have to come up with the additional 15%, whatever that is, out of pocket, and we're going to hold it in the bank so that we can deploy it if need be to make sure that our project, which let's face it, they own more of the project than we do as the owner operators, to make sure that the deal gets done. And so we've gone back and done the exact same thing, as you mentioned, Fernando, and 30% contingencies, and most of it's based upon time. The Evergrande is an interesting piece, and the ripple effects of that from many aspects in the real estate community. I think it's going to take the balance of this year, I think, before we understand the impact on the overall markets, financial and project related pipeline from everything, as well as what people are going to learn from that. I think it's going to have an effect on how banking institutions look at and underwrite and some of the ratios as a result of this as well. So it's going to be far reaching, clearly, as we head into this next year. So appreciate that. My numbers are roughly the same as where you're at right now in terms of cost. I think we just underwrote one for $100, over $100, but your $95, $98 is kind of what we're looking at in terms of a replacement to say go or no go. But again, all dependent upon rates, rental rates in the market from our competitors. So with that, Fernando, we can once again do a deep dive and always enjoy our conversation as well. We're looking at what the market looks like and as we head into it. So, but it's time that we probably need to begin wrapping up here. So if you would, tell us about, you shared some resources. We're following some of the same economists. I know you're probably looking at some others as well, but tell us where, for the folks that want to do a deeper dive to get a greater understanding, maybe share a book that has been helpful, but also some resources in terms of, from a macroeconomic standpoint, who and what other sources are you following to keep your ear to the ground that helps you make better projections as we head into this new year?
Absolutely. So this question is always interesting because I try to cheat on the answer and give like seven answers, but what I found recently is there's some really good resources that will give you multiple resources to follow. So for example, one of the authors I like to follow is Tim Ferriss, and he recently wrote two books that I love. One is called Tools of Titans, and the other is called Tribe of Mentors, where he interviews the best of the best in the world in their individual fields and distills them down so that each interview in the book itself is only like 1 to 3 pages long. And then those people, these high level, best in the world interviewees, or they themselves will say, hey, here are the resources that I use that have really benefited me. So over the last probably 60 days going through, I just recently started rereading Tools of Titans, this time with a little bit more vigor, as these high level investors and top of their class individuals start recommending resources that they've used. I have been writing these down and buying these books specifically. Mm-hmm. On the economic side, I've always been someone that likes to follow the Austrian school of economics. It's one that believes a little bit more in less government regulation and that government interference is actually what causes the larger troughs and peaks in cycles. In addition to that, I've recently got into, and I don't know why it took me so long, but I've recently got into reading biographies of very, very successful people. And I already mentioned a few. Ray Dalio has been one of my favorites. He recently came out with two books actually that were wonderful. The first one is Navigating Big Debt Crises, which is what the US is currently going through right now. And a lot of the rest of the world is going through. And then he also came out with a second book recently called, I think it's called The Changing World Order. And that one has been extremely eye-opening for the way that I'm going to be investing in the future. In addition to that, I read Steve Schwarzman's book. I think it's called What It Takes or Whatever It Takes. He's the principal of Blackstone. And then Sam Zell, who was the principal of Equity Trust or Equity Company, is one of the largest holders of real estate, individual holders of real estate in the world. And he had some really great, really, really great advice. And he's a fellow Chicagoan, so I had to pick that one up at least. Those are some ones that I've been following very closely, and I really enjoy them. John Burns, the economist that both you and I know, he came and spoke at Collective Genius. I've been following all his stuff. He's extremely bright. The way he writes things is kind of a forward-looking statement, as you know, here's what I'm seeing right now. This is what it's going to mean in 12, 24, 36, 48 months. So I really like following stuff. He's a little bit more focused on the single family stuff, but I think there is correlations between, you know, what happens in the single family market happens in the equities market, happens in the self-storage market, things like that. I think those would be the ones that I'd start with.
Yep. Also on my list as well, I've been a big fan of Ferris for a long time for that reason, because he's got access to get to interviews with some folks that we would normally never see on standard TV or any other show. And it's the folks that really are market movers. And funny, you mentioned Dalio, or not funny, but I remember specifically listening to Tim Ferriss's podcast in which he interviewed Ray Dalio. And I remember that I was in the LA Fitness in a particular city when I was listening to that, because then I started following Dalio. Because it was the first time I knew of him and heard of him, but then to understand how his mind works, to do that deeper dive absolutely is key. And I've been a fan of biographies, even going back to the robber barons of the turn of the century and learning about Rockefeller and what he was able to do and what he built. I mean, we can't do that today in today's environment. And not all of that was healthy, but also J.P. Morgan, to read the Book of Morgan or the House of Morgan by Ron Chernow, who also wrote about Rockefeller, and to learn unfettered capitalism. But what these guys did within the framework and building the community that they did, there's a whole lot to learn from that. But in a more modern sense, Peter Holtz, How to Profit in a Down Economy, just so that I am keeping prepared of what's happening. And from somebody who's been around a long time, an economist who's been around a long time and has seen, looking back in history, what has happened multiple times during a recession. And the way he distills it down makes it just sound so simple and is kind of the playbook for how to profit, especially in real estate as we head into the next recession. So another one to add to the list. So
literally right now.
It's a good one. You won't be disappointed. Well, Fernando, once again, just appreciate our time together, as always, not only in the podcast, but when we get together with the mastermind and otherwise. So if people want to get in touch with you to learn more about the wholesale side of the business and some of the opportunities that you're presenting to them to get on your list, how would they go about doing so?
Yeah. So usually I give our websites and social media and stuff like that. But I find that the more barriers you put in front of people, the less likely they are to reach out. So I just give out my cell phone nowadays. It has come back to bite me a little bit, but I still enjoy it.
Yeah, careful there. This is a pretty popular podcast in the self-storage world. So go.
Here's what I found. It's kind of like the 99-1 rule. Like 99% of the people that hear this will never take action. 1% will. And those are the people that I want to talk to. So yeah, my cell phone is area code 630-408-8090. That's my real cell phone number. You can text or call me. Text is a little bit easier because I'm always on the phone. Feel free to reach out with any questions you may have.
Beautiful. All right, Fernando, appreciate our time. Once again, looking forward to seeing you at our next mastermind. I think it'll be the next time we get together. So until then, take care, be safe.
Talk to you soon, Scott.
All right. Thanks, my friend.
Hey, gang, wait, three things before you leave. First, don't forget to subscribe to the Self Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram, and don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit the follow and subscribe button on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us. Take care.